Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Lear. I'm a librarian here at Teenscape at the LA Library. We have guests from Insomniac, a video game company, a wide variety of jobs falling under that umbrella. I'm very excited for you all to be here. Thank you so much. And let's get started. So if you could each say your name and a little bit about what you do and how you got to your current career.
My name's Sophie Brennan. I am a character technical director at Insomniac Games. Previously was at another company called Ready at Dawn, doing the same kind of thing. Originally from Scotland, I moved here 4 years ago. I went to university to study animation specifically or computer arts and ended up doing character technical direction, which is kind of like a weird hybrid between art and programming and animation.
Hi, I'm Angela Baker. I am the HR generalist and recruiter at Insomniac Games. I've been pretty much in the entertainment industry my entire career, and I've been with Insomniac Games now for almost 12 years. So everyone on this panel I actually hired, so that's encouraging. My degree is in sociology. So it's sort of adjacent to what I do, but not entirely. But it's good stuff.
Very cool. Hello, hello. I am Tyler Sparks. I'm a project manager with Insomniac. I've been in the industry for about 11 years now. I've been with Insomniac for actually, I just hit my second anniversary. We started on the same day. I've been doing production and project management, like I said, for 11 years. I started in QA, like the very bottom rung. That's testing, basically. Testing video games in the basement at Activision, and just took every opportunity I could and clawed my way up the ranks to where I am now.
You got your own.
Testing. My name's Cody. I'm an animator at Insomniac, working on Spider-Man with these guys. I'm originally from Wyoming, from the Midwest, so I kind of took a journey bouncing to Las Vegas, where I went to school, studied animation, worked for a few years, went back to school, studied more animation, and then eventually made my way out to Los Angeles, where I've been working in video games for about 4 years.
My name's Adam Noonchester. I'm a gameplay programmer at Insomniac Games. I've been here for about 10 years. I went to school in computer science. I got my master's in that, and then I worked in sort of the what's called the serious games industry for a couple of years before starting at Insomniac.
My name is Hysam. I'm an animator. I went to like three universities and a million community college campuses to pull one program together. Combine that with some breakdancing and lots of sword and stick fighting, and that's how I became an animator.
Thank you so much. One of the questions we often get asked, and especially I get a lot of feedback after people listen to the podcast, is what kind of internships or specialized training is there? And are there opportunities for high school students and or just college students and or adults trying to figure out a second career?
Probably better start with you.
Sure. I can hit that question. So yes, we offer internships, and I think internships are the best way to sort of, as a student, get your foot in the door. It exposes you to development life. It gives you a taste of what you're going to be doing on a daily basis. So I think it's a really great building block for someone to get some hands-on experience and to decide if this is really the road that they want to take, if this is really where their passion lies. For Insomniac, we hire interns for the summer. They're typically with us 8 to 12 weeks, and we hire them into specific departments. So this year we have an intern in animation, gameplay programming, character art, the list goes on and on. And so it's really a great way for students to get exposure to their chosen field, and also network. That's another really important aspect of taking an internship, is meeting people in your industry and making those connections, because you never know when you're going to need to reach out to someone and say, hey, could you, you know, review my portfolio? Or, hey, I'm trying to decide between these two options. What do you think might be a good idea? So it's really great to sort of have those relationships through an internship. But yes, internships all the way, 100%. Can't get any better than an internship for the summer. Our internships, you have to be 18 years or older. So typically we take college students. We do have master's students, PhD students, etc. But yeah, you do have to be at least 18 years or older.
I could chime in a little bit on that, actually. So when I got started, there wasn't like schooling specifically for what I wanted to do, which was production and project management. So I got in QA, like I mentioned earlier. Something I honestly would recommend for just about any field to do briefly, just to get a sense of how the industry works, because you see how a game works from all levels. You test it, you work on every field basically, so you can understand how a game is kind of put together. But now there are college programs and a lot more opportunities for people. But if you are looking for a ground floor thing, I would say QA is a good place to start.
I've got a wee note as well. When I was in university in Scotland, I took an internship between my third and fourth year. That was actually a really good opportunity for me because it was with a local company, a local mobile games company. And they actually took me on to do art and character art and concept art, of which, you know, I had some kind of skill in, but I quickly realized when I was on the job that I actually really didn't like that. And it definitely pushed me down the path I'm on right now because I knew that I couldn't be a concept artist or an illustrator at a professional level. So I decided to go down another route, which was a little bit more technical and involved a little bit more, programming or scripting know-how.
Lear, I think you mentioned something about high school students as well as continuing adult education. Could you just restate that part for me? Because that's the part I want to speak to.
Oh, sure. So we love to hear internships about college students. We have a lot of high schoolers who want to get their foot in early while they're thinking about college and applying for college. And also we have a lot of 20-year-old adult or even 30-year-old that their first career they didn't really like. So they're kind of looking around for a second career.
So in terms of the adults first, there's a lot of opportunity for different avenues of study. That's self-study. There's also a number of online options. There's local options, brick and mortars. But it's very important for them to look for, you're looking for what you want to learn. You're looking for a good teacher who is passionate about the student, but is also passionate about the subject and really knows what they're talking about. There's a lot of opportunities for people who are adults, whatever age they are. And when you're an adult, you've already learned how to learn. You really know how to like really go through and you really know how to help yourself learn. So it's really important that there's a lot of avenues for anybody's situation, from whether you find that your financial situation is you don't have a lot of money to spend, to where if you have a little bit of money to spend. And then the second thing for high school students, and for me, middle school students or junior high, you can always be studying. There's a lot of, again, you can go through books or online course of self-study. Just really a matter of them deciding that I want to give this a real shot. And then don't be discouraged initially. You have to give something a real chance to see if you're actually like it or not. Because initially you can't do it that well. But then, and so you say, I'm not good at this. Well, no one's good at it at first. So that's all I have to say.
I just wanted to add on top of that a lot of the game development tools that exist, like the Unity game engine and the Unreal game engine, are free to download and free to use. And they have video tutorials and communities dedicated to helping people out. So it's fairly easy to jump in and start trying to learn a little bit about it if you're so inclined.
Yeah. And for those people who are interested in animation, like when me and Heisum were training, when we were learning how to get into animation, there wasn't a lot of characters available for free to use. Well, nowadays, there is so much available online. It's crazy. So really, you just have to be willing to do it. And that's really the best thing you can do to start the path of animation for games.
This is kind of on the other side of the spectrum, but there's actually a lot of for-profit schools out there that will actually take advantage of you. So you have to be very careful when, if you do want to pursue school, choose a school with a reputation that's known to actually have its students graduate and have its students actually get into the workforce. But also consider that a lot of those programs that are accredited and known are actually, they have very, very high price tags on them. And while, you know, my field is very fulfilling, a lot of those schools, the price can be so high that it would take you a very, very long time to pay that back. And honestly, like, I you know, it's going to college is great, but in this field, you don't particularly need a degree. You know what I mean? You just need to show skill. You just need to show your portfolio. You just need to show that you're good to work with, that you're, you know, you've got a good attitude. Honestly, like, what school you came from, what degree you have, doesn't ever matter to me when I'm looking at resumes and stuff. I'm looking for your portfolio. I'm looking at your reel. I'm looking at your skills. So just be aware that there's a lot of people trying to take advantage of, you know, this career, and you know, people wanting to get into it, and you know, be careful about where you, if you do choose to go to school, be careful that you're going to a place that says accredited. And one last thing to add to that is getting a degree can actually be useful for international reasons. For example, I have a bachelor's degree. I would not be in the States without my bachelor's degree. It allowed me to get a visa, which allowed me to legally move and work here. And I feel that's important too. If you want to move internationally, which the games industry allows you to do quite easily, there's jobs all over the world, having a degree is often a prerequisite for a lot of these visas. So that's one way to advocate degrees.
Thank you. That's great. Any questions from the... Oh, and I did want to mention that LAPL has... I need to do a shout out for our databases. We have a lot of databases, including lynda.com, which is a pricey database, and you can kind of, you know, get your feet wet, see what kind of programs you like to do.
We actually use lynda.com.
I was just going to say, we have a subscriptioner to lynda.com. So, I mean, it's certainly for... you know, professionals as well as people who are starting to, you know, dip their toes into the various, you know, creative spaces.
Oh, that's great to hear. Any questions in the audience so far? Yes.
How large is coding? Like, does coding help with animation? Like, do they correlate or not? Like coding, because I took a coding class and we needed to like learn how to make things move. And I'm assuming in animation, like, that's making stuff move. So how large is coding, like, with animation?
I know, I might be equipped to talk to this one as well as you guys.
Well, I think coding could certainly address this. I mean, being an animator, you can talk about what you do and how much you code, and then Adam can jump in and certainly talk about the flip side of it. Yeah.
So the question was coding and animation.
Yeah, so... Hysam, feel free to jump in. Hysam, Sophie, okay. At any time. So in my experience in animation, like any additional skill you have, whether it's coding, rigging, character art, character design, it will always help almost all the time. And when I was in high school, I wasn't doing so good in like my geometry class, my algebra classes. And I bring it up because it's kind of related to coding, right? And when I was lucky enough to have a teacher who pulled me to the side and was like, hey man, you want to be an animator, right? Well, you're going to need to learn this stuff to be a good animator. And it kind of like really spun me around and I really got my stuff together in my math class. Yeah, there's definitely math involved in animation. And fast forward to today, I'm like really glad I paid attention more in those math classes now, because I know you guys would all agree, if you can code or if you can script, you might be able to make tools that make your job easier. And at Insomniac, we're lucky because we have a lot of people who do that for us. So the animators we're kind of spoiled in a lot of ways because we have a lot of tools already written for us. But at the same time, I know there's people on our team who, when they encounter a problem, they're not afraid to go in there and write their own tools.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a must, but I mean, it's not going to hurt. But I mean, if, for example, I don't want anybody who's not really good at math to be discouraged necessarily. You know what I mean? But I definitely agree with Cody that it definitely helps you. And just being analytical, like I study material logic and formal logic, and just being able to analyze is very helpful. I think that's the big part about animation and knowing how to speak to somebody who's coding and vice versa. You know, how to speak with you. Like, I need these to connect together here. And, but if you find yourself that you're not technical at all, I still think there's an avenue for you. I don't want to shut that down. I'm not saying that technical isn't important. I'm just saying that there's still an avenue. And depending on who explains it can be a lot easier too.
So my job actually touches directly on this, which being a character TD, it's actually a type of technical animator where I'm supposed to understand animation, I'm supposed to understand art, I'm supposed to understand our pipeline, our workflow. I provide the tools for these guys, actually. Our team writes the tools to speed up our animators. Sometimes we write tools as well to speed up our character artists and make their jobs easier. But when it comes to animators, like, I work with animators day in, day out, and there are a whole spectrum of people. There are people who are massively creative, but when it comes to technicalities, it's not their strong suite, but I think, you know, they have as much to bring as people who are also highly technical. The one bonus I would say, though, is whether or not you can actually code, being able to problem solve, understanding the logic of things, and especially understanding how your piece fits into the puzzle of the game. That is incredibly important. Just understanding how your work affects the person before and after you in our pipeline, which is how we pass work from basically department to department to get it to its final state. I would say that the understanding that will help you a lot, but in terms of actually coding and in terms of actually knowing your math, like, that's, they're bonuses, but I think you can do just as well, not being as confident in those skills.
Thank you. Any other questions so far? Okay, my next question is, can you talk about, for each of your jobs, is it possible to do it freelance? As in, can you do it from home? Or do you have to be in an office, or can you be in multiple offices?
I can go first.
Sure.
All right. So project management is very hands-on with people. In general, you want to be interfacing with people you're managing directly. That being said, aspects of project management can be done remotely. So analytics, data gathering, predictions and velocity and all that kind of tracking that you would do with whatever database was available can be done remotely. And I know some guys who do work from home, but in general, it pretty much has to be on site. But that's just project management. Most others have a different scenario.
Yeah. So regarding programming, we do have some programmers that do work remotely, but it's uncommon. Making games is a very collaborative thing, and so having someone in the office sitting next to the people, the animators or the designers that they're going to be working with, is oftentimes very, very valuable. So in general, there's not a lot of opportunities for a gameplay programmer to work remotely.
Yeah, and I definitely echo that. In animation, actually 2 years ago, I spent a year where I just worked at home. And I was working for a competitive gambling game that the company was based in Las Vegas. But I was just doing animation from home, and I was Skyping into the team pretty regularly. But with that said, game development is so collaborative. Like, you do get that urge to sit there and work with your team. For sure. And I would make a strong effort to go back so I could sit in the office with the team, just because we were that much more efficient when we were together.
Did learning how to create games kind of make you more appreciative towards gaming, in general? So is it because after learning how to my brother this film and I'm acting, and just actually learn how much time it takes to make a commercial, I begin to be more appreciative towards that?
So if anyone wants to finish with the freelance versus non-freelance question, and then we'll definitely go into that question.
I would like to add one thing to the freelancing aspect of thing, which is actually we do work with a lot of outsourcing partners and outsourcing firms. A lot of game companies do. It's a very widely used aspect of video games. I know friends who have worked at studios that outsource props or outsource concept art, because often these things can be expensive to keep in-house all the time. It really depends on what your idea of freelance is. Like, a lot of these companies are reputable and work with huge clients, and it means you have a wide breadth of work. But in backing up what these guys said, there's a complete kind of detachedness with the work. There's not as much ownership You know, you probably won't experience the collaborative process, which is actually one of my favorite parts of making games, is, you know, solving problems together. But that's not to say if your route is you just want to make art and you want to crank out art, or especially if you want to start and you want to build up a portfolio, there's definitely room for you in like these other companies that do a lot of kind of outsource work as well. In terms of freelance, technically, just so you're aware, a lot of companies, you can't really freelance, at least on games work, profitable games work, while working as a games developer. Usually it's a stipulation in your contract that says, you know, you can't work on someone else's game and make profit, but that isn't to say you can't do your own stuff at home, or a lot of times companies will let you, you know, make your own products or even put it out there. It really depends on your contract and, you know, and how, you know, your employer feels about that stuff. But I just wanted to add that a lot of people do freelance as well, but often they freelance in other fields that are not related to games, which is kind of important, I guess.
It really depends on how you define freelance as well. If you mean freelance, like I'm going to be full-time at this company and I don't want to be there for 10 years, like most of us probably want to, some people like myself, I like to be in a company and I just want to be there long-term, you know, as long as I'm happy there and things are going well, I want to be there long-term. But if you mean freelance, like in terms of like being able to jump around and not be stuck to one company for long, just like projects, like, hey, I'm going to be here for this project. There is an avenue for that, especially in Los Angeles. You can work on a project and be hired for that project and you can be in-house for that project, and then once that project is done, you can move on to something else. Or if there's another project opportunity for you there, they might ask you to stay, and you might want to stay. You may not want to, but it won't be docked against you. It's not like you have that opportunity.
It is very common for people to jump between studios in the industry.
Can you restate your question?
Working with video games and making more features for video games, like while playing them.
I mean, I think everyone would probably just say yes to that.
Yes.
Well, the only thing I would say is, I keep forgetting. When I first started in QA, I hated video games for a brief period of time because you play like the same mission over and over again for 8 to 12 hours a day. And then you go home, try to boot it up. You know, I would just read books most of the time. But as soon as I got like over that hump, you know, then yeah, once you understand that stuff, you can like, you know, appreciate the work, the mastery that goes into crafting. It's amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, we're lucky to be in a field, I think, probably most of us, if not all of us, like we loved games before we came and worked in games. So, I mean, I myself, like I only love them even more having have worked on them, you know.
And I will say that playing a lot of games and having that appreciation for games is a big part of our job that, you know, we'll call it competitive analysis, but, you know, we're working on a Spider-Man game, and a large part of that is, for me, was I need to go look at every Spider-Man game that's been made. I need to go look at what they've done. I need to look at how they did poorly, what they did well, and having knowledge of an experience working on games, it allows me to look at those past titles or our competitors in with an analytical eye and really, you know, draw either inspiration or lessons that I can apply to my job.
I think also just to sort of address, you know, these are creative types. You know, even Adam, I consider a creative type, even though he is a programmer. These are individuals who feel incredibly passionate about what they do. And I don't know that you can love what you do and not sort of have it bleed out into, you know, a love for, you know, whatever you're doing. You said, you know, you're an actor. You probably love acting. You'd probably do it if you maybe didn't get paid to do it. So, you know, I think that there's a certain level of love for what they do. And that sort of, you know, is outside the office as well as in the office.
To add a couple of things to that, though, I know developers who do not play games, and usually artists, I would say, and they're not a big fan of games, but they love the art of animation, or they love creating characters or world or illustration. And I do think playing games certainly helps a ton. if you're not a huge gamer, you know, but you love the craft, you love the making, then you're valuable too, you know. And just to touch upon just briefly, playing games is not making games. So I love to play games. I play it to play games to decompress, actually. It's my form of relaxation. But a lot of people think that playing a game is the same as making a game, and they're very, very two different beasts. It's just because you play a lot of games, you know, you might have a good eye for like what a good design is, or, you know, what feels right. But at the end of the day, if you're not making something, it's worth squat, really. We need to see actual pieces and products at the end of it. That's what our job is. Thank
you. Another question that comes up often is, for each of your positions, are these good jobs for extroverts, introverts, or can you be a mix? Like, because you said collaboration is key. So for someone who's has anxiety or is uncomfortable with that, what kind of positions fits yours?
I can sort of address that because I do a lot of hiring. We have everything across the board. We have extreme introverts and we have extreme extroverts. And then we have people happily in the middle. And like I said, every shade in between. It really depends upon how you like to communicate. And we ask people that on a pretty regular basis. We try and find out what their best mode of communication is, and try and work with that. You know, there's a lot of small teamwork that happens. So it could be just a couple of people, maybe two or three people. Typically, you know, if you're a little bit more on the introverted side, you know, can work with that. If you're an extrovert, that's cool too. It's just you know, it's sort of learning what works for you and then making sure that your coworkers know what works for you. You know, if you're someone who prefers to communicate via email, maybe that's the road you take. If you're someone who feels more comfortable getting up and talking face to face with someone, that's a road to do too. So we just sort of try and make sure that communication is happening. That's the biggest thing, is how do we communicate? Let's find that out, and then we'll find out what works best for the individual. You know, but like I said, yeah, we have the entire spectrum, so for sure.
Can I build on that? So to sort of build on that, that's where PM comes in, project management comes in handy. Is part of our job is to figure out how people communicate. It also helps to be a bit of an extrovert as a PM, because you have to talk to everybody, and you have to figure out what makes everybody tick and how they work best. You know, as Angela said, people work in a myriad of different ways, and I've seen the most extreme introverted to the most extreme extroverted. Personally, I'm a bit of a extroverted introvert. Like, I can work with people, but I prefer to be alone. So yeah, I mean, it takes all kinds.
Yeah, I think communication is really important for a person, whether they're, so if you're really introverted, I think it's good to try to move towards the middle. If you're really extroverted, I think it's also good to spend some time just kind of like trying to be quiet a little bit every once in a while. Like just trying to find a balance to where you're not overpowering if you're very extroverted. To where, like, you know what, I'm just going to stay quiet for a moment and let this person talk. And then if you're very introverted, I think it's not a bad practice to try and communicate more. It'll just help you also express what your needs might be in the workplace. And it'll help other people as well. I think in a collaborative environment, it's important to be able to communicate in some way. And just take into consideration that the other people have to deal with me and I have to deal with you, essentially, is the important part. That you respect other people that you're working with and vice versa, that they respect you as well.
So as I'm a lead of a group of gameplay programmers, and one of the big class of problems that I wind up having to solve a lot is communication issues, where there have been some amount of miscommunication. And I do think that I do have people that kind of run the gamut between being fairly introverted, they would like to sit and just program by themselves, to being more extroverted. But in in my group at least, communication is key. And so I do think that if you're extremely introverted, you're going to have to figure out what kinds of communication you are comfortable with. You're going to have to work on that.
Thank you. One of the questions that often comes up also is, what does a day in the work life look like for everyone? Because you're all very different in terms of job titles. It'd be interesting to hear what a day in the life seems like.
Sure. I mean, I can start. My week is often crazy, all over the place. Being in character technical direction, I'm a kind of support role, but I'm also a production role. So, you know, a lot of days I'll come in, I'll check my emails first, because usually if someone's wanting, you know, said something either the night before or in the morning before I get in, because we all kind of have flexible hours. You know, we still have core hours, but for example, I roll in at like 10, whereas some other people come in super early at like 6. So usually I have a batch of emails to read through just to kind of get my bearings on where I am in the day. And then I have, you know, a current set of tasks that I'll be working on, assets that need to be created or tools that need to be supported that I'll be kind of working on during the day. And then in between all that, there'll be cases where animators will, you know, maybe have a problem and I have to come over, and, you know, a technical problem, and I have to come over and figure that out, or they, you know, hand me their scene and I have to kind of poke through it a bit and see what's broken or how they can fix it. To also meetings talking about scoping out future things, you know, any future problems coming up, also talking about, you know, maybe new technology or new production techniques or something that we want to try out. So I would say a lot of people's days are like that, but specifically because I'm in a half support role, I would say, I think someone said a statistic once is like, you know, something like 60%, you know, working or 40% support or something like that. But as your project tips towards the end, as you're finishing off your project, that certainly swings the other way, and you're definitely most of the time a support role more than creating content.
I'll say that my job tends to change based on what part of the project that we're in. Games oftentimes go through big phases. You'll have a pre-production phase, you'll have a production phase, and then you'll have like either a post-production or kind of the like bug fixing and wrap-up phase. Right now we're kind of in the post-production phase, and so a lot of my day is similar to Sophie, where I'll get in the morning, I'll check my emails, see if somebody is having some trouble, see if somebody is blocked, if there's something that either myself or somebody on my team needs to jump on right away. And then I will, once I'm caught up on emails, I will check. We have software that our testers use to sort of log new bugs that they have found over the previous day. And I will use that software and I'll sort of review all of the new issues that have come up in the game and try and prioritize what I'm going to work on trying to fix, what people on my team are going to try and work on fixing. And then for the rest of the day, it's usually a mix of programming at my desk, trying to fix some of these issues, or talking with designers, talking with animators, either helping them diagnose a problem that they're having or giving them advice on here's how you might solve that problem. But yeah, that's my day right now, at least.
Code, you want to go ahead and go?
Yeah. So let's see. When I come into work, if I'm already deep into an animation sequence, like I've already started, my day looks a lot different than if I'm at the beginning of like a new animation I'm gonna do. So right now I'm like polishing some sequences. So when I get into work, I do the same thing these guys do. I'll pull the latest build of the game. I'll grab me a cup of coffee, go through my emails, but then I'll actually just look at my sequence, just start to finish, headphones on, pen and paper in front of me, and I'll just watch it once. And then everything that I see that looks awful, I'll just write down. It's like, all right, I don't like the shape the character's making here. Maybe there's a pop here. This area could be stronger. This camera's a little weird. I'll just write down like a hit list is what I call it. And then I'll just plug in and go. I'll just animate for the morning. And then usually by lunchtime, like my eyes are fried and I can't really look at my scene anymore. So it's break time. And then I'll kind of just jump right back into it. And we've been moving pretty quick. I came pretty late onto the project. So I definitely feel like I've been going like full speed for the past couple months, but I love it. But with that said, if I hit a wall and I'm having trouble moving forward or getting the quality I want, that's when I'll get my team involved. And we actually sit with our leads on an almost daily basis just to get somebody else to look at our stuff so we can make sure we're moving forward and just building performances and keeping a high quality and also keeping getting other brains in the shot and making sure we got new ideas and it's not just coming from one brain and we're building up awesome experiences.
Okay. All right. So I'm not a content creator like these awesome people. So my day is completely different. You've got your standard run-of-the-mill stuff. I've got email. I check my Slack or whatever our instant messaging platform you happen to use. But for me, every email, every IM, every post-it note dropped off of my desk is a follow-up item. So I maintain this personal Scrum board, and this is what makes project management fun, at least for me. I'm kind of weird. That's why I'm a project manager. I'll have hundreds of things to do every day, and they're all unique. So every day I walk into work, it's a completely different work day. It's always challenging. It's always diverse. Very often you have conflicting personalities. You have conflict resolution. You have troubleshooting, you know, seemingly impassable problems that people cannot get around, and you have to figure out ways to get around them every day. You run up against these problems of like a fixed amount of time, number of resources, and then we have this amount of stuff that we have to do. How do we rearrange those to get that stuff done? Like, it's constantly troubleshooting. It's constantly thinking. And so I have to be very aware of like how much glycogen I got left. Like my literal brain energy gets depleted so quickly that I have to like schedule times where I know I'm going to be efficient. Like from 10 to 11, roughly half an hour after I have my granola or whatever, like I'm super awesome. But then like right after lunch, I go into a food coma, so I gotta chill for a bit and maybe just focus on documentation. You know, it's that's for me the awesome part of being a PM is that it's always different.
Thank you. My typical workday starts in the evening. I generally email myself in the evening of where I left off. You know, when I was really young and I started off, or not young, I wasn't that young when I started, but when I started off, I remember asking this programmer, like, how is it that you leave? Because everything seems to be so, have so much problems and it's broken. How do you walk away from it? I really just wanted to resolve the problem. And it was hard to learn how to leave. So the way I learned how to leave was write myself note of where I left off. And then if I have any other notes from leads or someone, I'll usually forward their email to myself again. So it's right there in the beginning. So when I come in the morning, that's pretty much the first thing I look at is I'll just check and see, okay, what was I working on yesterday? Okay, and refresh to see where I was at. I'm going to talk about where I am when I'm in the bulk of production, not in the beginning or the end. So my day is pretty much, because I mostly work on the traversal of the characters in the game, like when you push the controls, how do they move? So I'm often trying to see, okay, how do we make this actually feel good for the player themselves? So, and actually a long time ago, what I used to make people do in meetings was I used to make them tap the table to see if that button press felt good with the motion. So I'm often holding the controller and pushing on the controller. Even if I'm looking at the animation in Maya alone, I'll push on the controller and see, am I getting the energy that I want? Am I feeling the transfer of energy from my thumb going into my character moving in the 3D program? So I'll be doing that. I'll be working on an animation. I'll be trying to figure out how can we do this elegantly without making 100 animations if it can just be 10. So what's a way to like, so that's the fun part for me is problem solving. I love that aspect of it. I'll also be personally, I'll be getting up and acting. So a lot of people who are in the area will be like laughing because I'll be up and I'll be acting. I'll be trying to feel something out. I'll be doing like a breakdancing move that I might know to give me like a position that I might not be able to get normally. I'll be doing something and trying to feel, okay, where's the pressure on my body? What muscle's holding this up? Am I being held up by structure? I.e. is my bone holding me up because it has to hold me up, or is it my muscle? So I'll be analyzing that, getting up, writing down notes, going into Maya, working that out, putting it in game again, getting on the controller, And then if it's not working at all, I'll be talking to other people. I'll be seeing if another department's involved in it not working. That's kind of my day. It's kind of going back between me jumping up and down and then going into the computer, playing the game, making sure it feels good. And then, having fun talking to the people that I work with, essentially. That's a typical day.
Could I maybe say a thing to this? Everyone's responses here are people who are really, really comfortable with their skill set and their job. So, when you're starting out, when you're doing this, the biggest obstacles to you will be learning the software, learning the core of whatever you're, doing, whether it's programming or animation or art, drawing or, whatever your core skill is, that will be the thing that basically swallows you up and makes you, lay awake at night kind of thing, if you're really into it. But I also didn't want to, say that there isn't room for that. Like a lot of these people here, we all have years experience and we're comfortable and we're kind of deep in the process. But there's people who are juniors who, less of their day is the communication or the back and forth. And a lot of it's just plugging away and getting better at their chosen skill. And that's also really important that we have that too, because when I first started my first job, I can't believe I actually got hired, because I literally knew nothing. Like in terms of like rigging, I didn't know how to skin, which is like for an animator, that's like, I don't know how to create a walk cycle. And I must have talked a good talk, because they brought me on. And luckily they trained me for 6 months, which is incredibly unusual. But they sat down and they trained me for 6 months because they had scope to do it. And they taught me how to do my specific job, because I had kind of enough initiative and enough understanding that they knew that I could be taught, you know what I mean? But I would say that nowadays it's a lot harder to jump in to the industry, not knowing, much, you know what I mean? There's a lot of content online, there's a lot of tutorials and courses, and you'll see a breadth of work out there, and the breadth of work you'll be looking at will be the work mostly of professionals. And honestly, a lot of time that's kind of what you're up against, and it's really scary and intimidating. And it certainly almost scared me out of the industry, because I was like, how could I ever be on the same level as these people? But the most important thing, especially when you're starting out, is just create a lot of stuff, and you're going to make a lot of failures. A lot of it's going to look terrible, and you're going to want to throw it in the bin, and you're going to want to, scream at a wall, and it's going to be tough. But you have to be creating all the time, and you have to be making mistakes fast so you can recover from and learn from them. Because when you're on the job, a lot of times there isn't as much room to make mistakes anymore. You know what I mean? So a lot of the people that we bring on, especially at our level, are already pretty comfortable, at least with their core skills. And that's why we're talking a lot about communication, or specifically, the specifics of our job, which actually can be quite advanced, as opposed to, hey, I know how to animate, or I know how to make a character look like they're thinking, or I know how to make a character, move forward in code, you know what I mean? Stuff like that.
Anyone else for the, would you
like? Oh, sure. So because I am in a support function of the company, my day looks nothing like any of these guys. Maybe Tyler. Tyler and I are probably a little bit closer in our roles. But I get into the studio and I make sure nothing's happened. That's quite frankly a huge part of my job, is to make sure that our employees are healthy and happy and safe and are getting the support. And by support, I mean questions answered. I mean making sure that they're talking to the right people. I answer everything from, hey, I got this explanation of benefits because I went to the dentist and I don't know what that means, to hey, I'm ready to hire this individual. Let's talk about start dates and how do we get them in. Oh, and by the way, this candidate lives in New York City, so we're gonna have to relocate them. So okay, we're gonna do that. To hey, I'm having this problem with a coworker. I'm not sure how to address it. Do you have a suggestion? to, hey, my paycheck, you know, I forgot to turn in my hours. What do I do? So every day is completely and radically different for me, which is quite frankly why I love my job, because it never gets old. Every day there is something new to tackle and something new to take on. And so that's super exciting for me. And also, I'm not a creative person in any way, shape, or form. I cannot draw, I cannot program, I'm not creative in any regard, period. That being said, I get to work with these incredibly talented individuals who are so creative and so think outside the box that to me, it's a very sort of inspirational experience, because they're so interesting and just really a pleasure to work with. And so I enjoy, you know, I get a kick out of coming into the office every day and seeing sort of what's going to happen today. And it never fails to disappoint. So, is that right? Never fails to disappoint. Okay. It's a great experience. And like I said, I've been with the studio a very long time. And, you know, I think that states something about sort of our studio as well. You know, we have an incredible group of individuals, and I think we're very lucky to do what we do, where we do it.
Anyone else for that question? Did you get to answer it? Okay, great. So we are about 5 minutes from being done. Any other questions? Yes, go ahead.
Average game to, like, be created.
Excellent question. How long does an average game take to be created?
Yeah, sorry.
Mm-mm.
No. so I'm not going to give specifics about our project. Don't worry. that's pretty much what I do, is I manage the schedules from start to finish. And I've been on projects. I created a VR product in 4 months, and I was on a Call of Duty title that took us 4 years. What's up? I made Call of Duty for 10 years. It's a pretty awesome franchise. So it really depends. It depends on the scope. It depends on, the breadth of features. You know, if you're doing an open world game versus a linear, you know, story based game, narrative driven game kind of thing. And they all have their own challenges. So I couldn't give you a specific answer unless you had a targeted example of a video game.
I will say that, like, a kind of a modern console game is going to take 2 to 4 years probably to make.
Yeah, AAA.
You know, I think it depends upon how many people you've got working on it, you know. If it's a one-man show, it's a little different than if you've got, you know, 2,000 people working on it. So, again, it's a huge spectrum, but yeah.
Super quick lightning round question. For those thinking or wanting to go into video games, what platforms should they kind of look into? And, you know, maybe with lynda.com, et cetera.
Platforms as in?
Like training platforms, okay. Or what specific technology do you use?
Oh, okay. As a character TD, we primarily at our studio use Maya, Autodesk Maya. But, you know, we also, I think, use Motion Builder, and our character artists use whatever program they're comfortable with, since the character models can be exported and imported in Maya, usually some sort of standardized format. So some people use 3ds Max, some people use, I think, Modo, some people use Maya. There's a range. We also use, from the character side of things, we use ZBrush. To sculpt high definition characters, and also I think Substance Designer to make our texturing and surfacing, and Marvelous Designer as well to simulate and create our cloth and our garments and our characters. So there's a huge breadth of programs to learn, but if you're interested in character art or animation, usually Maya is a good place to start. And it offers, I think, definitely if you're at school and you have a school email, it offers basically a version of Maya for as long as you're at school, as long as you have a registered email address. If not, I think there's also the LT version, which is missing some features, but is cheaper, and you can do like subscriptions to it and stuff. So it's quite easy to get a hold of. They make it a lot easier these days to get a hold of these programs than they did before. But I also would mention, do not neglect your traditional skills, you know, drawing, life drawing, observational drawing, you know, studying, if you're especially if you're artistic, color studies and stuff. And from my side of things, scripting, I use Python primarily. But that's mainly what character TDs use. I think there is some people who use like C++ or something to create plugins, but I'm not really familiar with that stuff. But yeah, that's breadth of tools. But Maya is a good starting point, especially for character TDs and character artists.
On gameplay programming, we primarily use C++, though in the studio we do have, I write Python scripts every once in a while. We use Perl, JavaScript, and Flash, but it's primarily C++. If you're interested in going into game programming, a traditional computer science degree is fantastic. Or there are some good game programming schools out there as well. Other tools that we make fairly heavy use of are Excel, Microsoft Word. We use source control software like Perforce and Git. And then just general computer skills.
Just a couple of quick things. So if you're looking in, if you're interested in project management or production, there is no like book on how to manage projects. I mean, I'm sure there actually are, but I never read one, and it was mostly figuring stuff out on the fly. But the one thing I would recommend is, you know, every day looking to improve yourself and your craft, and that's just reading a lot of books. I mean, I've got like a short list of a dozen I could rattle off, but it's more about being able to take a close look at yourself, examine what works and what doesn't, and how you can build upon that to become a better person and a better professional at the same time.
If you guys are interested in getting into animation, there's this book called The Animator Survival Kit. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a copy in this library. That book is priceless. It's that, and then Eric Goldberg, a phenomenal animator, he has another animation book. Do you know what that one's called, Heisen?
No, I don't remember the title.
I think it's called Animator's Toolkit or something. But like grab a book and just, I mean, if all you have is a blank notebook, just start drawing in the corners of your notebook and start there and work your way up to a 3D package like Maya or something. But at the end of the day, for animation, the principles function the same in both 2D and 3D. So just start, you know, that's the best thing you can do.
Okay, well, if we're moving off of software, I would say that the things you need for things that are helpful as an animator are visualization skills. So I highly recommend reading classic literature and not having images in those books so that you can develop your own images in your head. So learning visualization, which is a whole other, I could just go on and on about what visualization is, but it's really just the ability to see an image in your mind or wherever you want it, wherever you think it is, and be able to put that image down. So you're not searching for it, it actually exists somewhere there that you see it, and then you put it down afterwards. Whether you do that with a drawing or with a pose in Maya, it doesn't really matter. The next thing is observation. So visualization is real ability to kind of, I recommend reading like something like Treasure Island, an unabridged, unedited version, and see the images that come to your head and learn how to use that. The next thing would be analysis, which is you moving around and analyzing what's going on. And then the last thing I would say is observation, which was you're looking at others. There's a whole myriad of things I can go through. I'm just giving you three just to make it concise.
I actually completely spaced. There are literally books on project management. there's Waterfall, Kanban, Scrum, and Lean, which are the primary methodologies that we use. Those are technologies used in software and hardware development. None of them work out of the box perfectly on video games, but aspects come into play. Waterfall is an unescapable reality of video games, and then we use a lot of Agile, and I prefer Scrum personally. So there's a book by Jeff Sutherland on Scrum. That's a great place to start if you are interested in that. I don't know why I forgot about that.
Thank you. Do you want to talk about
I mean, no. My software is like super boring and like, no, it's, there's nothing exciting about the software I use. So no, it's, yeah, I wish I could say it was, but this is, that's the one boring part of my job is the software. So.
One thing I'll touch upon briefly, it was mentioned earlier, is there's a lot of game engines out there that you can download for free. Unity, is Epic's Unreal Engine free?
Free.
Yeah.
Part of it.
Unreal's free. I'd recommend Construct or Game Maker if you're just starting out.
Yeah. Those are 2D and if you're interested in design visual. Or actually the making of games rather than like say a course, like a skill, a kind of like art or animation or programming, there's tools out there that are free. Tons of tutorials online, free tutorials, blogs. You know, there's tons of information out there on how to learn this. Unfortunately, a lot of it's not very well constructed in terms of like getting from A to B. Like you'll learn how to do a very specific thing in this very specific software. But there is, if you have a question, you type it into Google, there's probably an answer. Whether it's a good answer first time or not, you'll have to find out on your own. But the information out there these days is incredible, and there's a million ways to get started. It just, it goes down to however you feel comfortable approaching it, I guess.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us today. We really appreciate everything you've taught us. Round of applause for Insomniac Games. And so please keep an eye out for the podcast. It will be on under our teen website. I will send you the link once it's up. And thank you all so much for joining us today.